Hello, everyone. It's June 14th, and we're kicking this off hard with the MSP Dispatch. Today, my name is Tony Francisco, and today we have an awesome co-host, Jason Slagle, the man, the myth, the legend, the person that hides behind the beard. He actually doesn't have one in real life. It's totally a filter. Jason, how are you doing?
I'm good. Hopefully this Snapchat filter holds up for the rest of the show here.
There's actually a, did you see the link online? And there's a Facebook group talking about a charity event to shave off the beard.
I am doing it.
Oh, I'll mortgage my house for this one. This is happening. Yeah. Like, this is going to happen. That is awesome. Well, good for you, man. Good for you. Okay. Let's kick off some news. In channel E to E, ConnectWise has rebranded multiple products and services in their cybersecurity portfolio for the MSP market. The rebrand solution reinforces ConnectWise ambitions in the security market, where the MSP can drive down risk, accelerate automation, and improve profit margins. The rebranded solutions also phase out acquired companies, Pert Security and Stratizen Business brands. In their new rebranding portfolio, everything seems to start off with a ConnectWise theme. I don't know if you're going to notice. We have ConnectWise Cybersecurity Management, which describes all the overall portfolio, previously known as ConnectWise Fortify. ConnectWise SaaS Security, which is formerly Fortify SaaS. ConnectWise Risk Management. ConnectWise Endpoint Policy. ConnectWise MDR, leveraging the SentinelOne and Bitdefender, formerly Fortify Endpoints. And ConnectWise SEIM, formerly SIEM, only powered by Perch, and ConnectWise co-managed SIEM, formerly co-managed SIEM, powered by Stratizen and Network Threat Detection by Perch. And the list goes on and on. Jason, so many questions for you here. Is this simply a rebrand where they're consolidating everything under a single umbrella, kind of like the Las Vegas hotel where they don't want you to leave, everything's in there? Just a very simple rebrand, or is it something deeper where they don't want you to leave their ecosystem? What are your thoughts?
I think there's probably a mix of it. I do think they were incentivized to get rid of some of the brands that they've acquired and kind of bring them under the umbrella. You know, they've done that all along. Although, you know, those of us that have been here a while will always call it Perch. We will always call it LabTech, right? And those Perch shirts are going to become more valuable now because they're going to be gone. I do question some of the names they chose. If it was me and I was in charge of that, I probably would have left Fortify and all of those names just to try to help with some search engine optimization. We seem to have this trend where vendors are naming things brand verb. It makes Googling them relatively difficult from time to time.
Well, maybe there is a cross-pollination there where the brand is the verb. I'm going to Google something. Do you have a Kleenex? Well, it's a tissue and the manufacturer is Kleenex. And when the brand and the verb becomes ubiquitous to an action, that's a huge positive. So maybe that's what they're pushing for. I can also, as you were talking, I could hear their entire marketing team listening to this and so quiet that you could hear their cells dividing, you know, like
I'm waiting to get a text later from one of them.
and it has to be a very difficult process because, again, you're trying to correlate not just the brand, the ConnectWise brand, with the action, which is may not be just an action. It may be an entire ecosystem in itself in its particular silo, all the way down to just a simple function. But you're trying to correlate a brand to that verb, to that action, to that function, or with the community that you're trying to serve based on the acquisition that was made. But at the same time, you're trying to keep the isolated interest in that particular reason why that purchase was made. Would if in the event of ConnectWise consolidating everything under their ConnectWise umbrella, can you anticipate any other actions that they may go based on that track record of who they've been acquiring?
I mean, there are still pieces of the puzzle that they have not yet purchased, right? They don't have, you know, off the top of my head, immediate ones, knowing other vendors I hang out with and frequent. They don't have security awareness training, right? I don't think they have a good solution for, they have some assessment solutions, but I don't think they solve the full problem. There's still unsolved problems, even though they have BrightGage and the reporting. BrightGage is pretty lightweight reporting, right? Obviously, you can get a little better than that. So, I mean, there are still unsolved pieces inside of this ecosystem that they could still acquire.
Yeah, then and I think I'd like to remind everyone that the input that we have and the opinions that we have on a rebrand, hey. Just opinions. Once the marketing team does that assessment and they're trying to figure out what that vision is and they make that move, it's very difficult to put the pin back in the grenade. So, yeah. But ultimately we have to understand that they have a vision and they're moving forward in that division. I'd be really interested if they heed the suggestions that Jason just made. So, so let's kick off to the next story. Kaiser Permanente had a breach. Kaiser recently revealed that an employee email compromise on April 5th left personal medical information, PMI, on nearly 70,000 of its patients at risk of compromise. Although Kaiser said that the attacker had access for only a couple of hours, there's no evidence that the sensitive data was breached. Patient information included first name, last name, medical records, dates of service, and lab test results were involved in this. The company said in a notice that went out public, which of course is going to affect the corporation as a whole. This is something that is going to involve a lot of discussion between Jason and I. Jason, HIPAA, GLBA, Sarbanes-Oxley, SEC, all the compliance that's been pushed so hard for the last, realistically, 12 years.
Yeah.
Is that having an impact? Because all we talk about here at the MSP Dispatch are security breaches, vulnerabilities, exploitations. Here's the impact. Ransomware has been shooting up drastically so much that last week we just talked about ransomware attackers are now attacking each other, which begs the question, are you running out of customers? Are you getting bored? Is there a political driver behind that? There's so many questions I have about this, but Kaiser is a huge, huge player in the medical industry. Do you feel that the compliancy that's been implemented, specifically HIPAA, has had a beneficial impact on those that it's targeting? And we're talking about HIPAA, which of course attacks the medical community.
Yeah. I mean, I think it has. I think that when you see these big, big, huge companies breached, and there have been multiples of them. If you go look at the HHS, like the HIPAA wall of shame, there are a ton of giant companies that have been breached over time. And I think it's really disheartening to the smaller practices when they don't have near the budget of these gigantic companies. And again, they don't have the same attack surface either. But it can become one of those things that, like, well, if Kaiser can't protect themselves, like, what chance do I possibly have to do so?
Well, are you right there confusing the story between the regular business and the smaller MSP and the larger enterprise? I couldn't tell if you were talking about a large hospital and a small, a small practice between a larger corporation and a smaller company, the SMB market, or you're talking about a very large MSP with the standardized calcified security stack and practice and the smaller MSP that's just trying to implement something more than a spreadsheet to keep everything going. Well, I can't put a PSA in. So
I think that it applies everywhere, right? The same. Yeah.
So with these standards that are being implemented, is there any particular standard security compliancy that you are favoring? Are you really appreciating one of them?
We align internally everything to CIS, and then we map that back to wherever it needs to go. Just because the CIS is so prescriptive, and it gives you it makes it easier to gather the evidence to indicate they're actually doing the right thing. So I mean, right now that's our favorite approach. We did look, and I have been looking recently, whether I want to change and align to NIST CSF instead, just because it's a little more widespread. But in the end, I think you're going to be, you know, HIPAA is HIPAA. You have to do the things for HIPAA. But a lot of them, there's overlap between a lot of these frameworks. So if you try to implement 18 different frameworks, you're going to fail. So, you know, you have to pick one and then map it to wherever the rest of them you need are, and then fill in the gaps if you need to.
And you mentioned CIS. For those out there, the pedestrians in the audience, could be me, maybe. What is CIS?
CIS is the Center for Internet Security. They're a nonprofit group that has a set of a security framework and a set of what they call benchmarks, to the point where they'll give you a run book to harden like a Windows server to their benchmarks, right? So like change this setting. And these are the controls that they actually implement by changing these settings.
For those of you listening, I cannot recommend enough that you look into CIS and that particular framework. There's a good rule of thumb in life. If you can't explain it, you don't understand it. But once you understand something, once you understand the mechanics of something, the anatomy of how it all fits together, you can control it a little bit better. You can manipulate it a little bit better because you understand what is movable and what isn't. In this particular case, as Jason just pointed out, this is a framework that clearly explains how you should be doing something so you understand it better and you have far more control and frankly, you can be much more effective in the security that you're implementing for your customers. So with that, let's jump into the next story. Hang on, everyone. It gets worse. Confluent servers have been hacked. Ransomware gangs are now targeting and actively exploiting remote code execution vulnerability affecting Atlassian Confluent server and data center instances for initial access to corporate networks. Note, this has been recently patched. Confluence is a web-based corporate wiki developed by an Australian company, Atlassian. It's extremely common. We use it internally. Jason, I know you use it, and this is going to be a topic of conversation. If this is successfully exploited, the OGNL injection vulnerability, CVE 2022-26134, enables unauthenticated attackers to take over unpatched servers remotely by creating new admin accounts and executing arbitrary code. Jason, from what I understand about this particular hack, this is an on-premise exploitation. It's not really affecting the web-based version. There are very few of these attacks that have been noted. But isn't the bigger story that your firewall, they're not attacking a customer independently. They're now going for the vendor level to get into multiple customers. They're moving upstream. Is that what your feeling is about this? Or is this something a little bit more local to just one particular genre?
I mean, these are on-prem servers. I haven't seen any evidence that they're coming down from like basically a master Confluence instance to attack things below it. With tools like Shodan, it's pretty easy to find wide swaths of a particular product that live on the internet. And most people that run Confluence end up internet exposing it, right? So it's an application that is typically inside the firewall that is exposed to outside of the firewall. So if you don't set your network up correctly, right, if you don't have proper DMZs and network segregation, then it can very easily, those services, Confluence or any other service like that, can easily become a jumping point to basically laterally move inside of the network.
You brought up an interesting point about how it's attacking one particular exploit, but you also made a very small reference to something upstream where they're going at the vendor level, like a Kaseya. That exploitation had a huge impact on the MSP community. Yep. Do you anticipate this to be more of a corporate attack? Because this is very much in the Atlassian group, which is very clearly into the MSP developer level audience, which is less of a financial medical hack. This is more on the back end, on the technology that's consumed day to day by people that aren't really in the security realm. They're focused on what their job is, and the people that are locking these down aren't worried about the implementation of something. This is coming straight from the vendor, just like the Kaseya hacks and all the other hacks that were. In this particular case, because it's an on-premise deployment, is this something that maybe is pushing everyone towards a cloud execution, like a cloud consumption?
Yeah, maybe. I've been since we started discussing this story before we came on, I've been having that internal debate in my head as to whether or not I think that cloud, because we run Confluence Cloud, we don't run on-prem. I used to run on-prem for many years. I ran on-prem Confluence, but at CNWR, I made the decision to go cloud-based. The argument for cloud is that the vendor can make sure everything's patched and everything is good. The argument against all cloud is that when there are vulnerabilities, you may not ever even know about them, right? Because a lot of these walled ecosystems in the cloud, there's no CVEs for cloud services. Right, like you can't go get a CVE for something that only lives in the cloud. So these exploits, they get patched and fixed silently without any indication to the client that there may have been a security issue.
And that's the interesting part of I think any on-premise deployment is that you need to operationalize every single aspect of it. It's not just the server setup. You now have to worry about the patches. You now have to worry about the small updates. You now have to worry about all the ACLs and the minor routing components that are vulnerabilities that are not are no longer internal. They're strictly external, but you have to worry about all that. So that operational aspect is that's quite a bit of resource drain from something that you originally anticipated to be very simple.
Yeah, for sure. If you're not equipped to actually operate and run and maintain the software that you're running on prem, then cloud is a clear choice, right? Like that, because you give that to somebody else, right? The whole reason we have PaaS and IaaS and all that stuff is because people don't want to touch servers. If I've touched servers, it's a bad day. You outsource the stuff that you're not good at to other people that are good at it.
Absolutely. We'd like everyone's input on this, all of the opinions out there. We can feel them as we're talking, these opinions that are being yelled at. That's not the way it works. Well, what about this? We want to hear from you. Give us a shout out at news@mspmediatv.tv. You can see us on all the social media channels out there. Of course, you're going to see us on YouTube. Facebook is a great group. So with that, let's jump into some community events.
So on 6/14, we have Tradecraft Tuesday presented by Huntress. 6/15 and 6/16, the ASCII Success Summit in Southern California. I'm actually pretty bummed out I didn't get to go to an ASCII this year. 6/15 in noon, we have the NSITSP Vendor Partner Program Introduction Call, where they're introducing their partner program to bring partners into the fold. 6/16 at 11 a.m. What the Swag, presented by Channel Program. I'm super excited for that one. I love me some good swag. Matt did a thing about swag a couple weeks back, and so this time they're going to talk about what makes good swag. And then 6/17, we have the MSP Dispatch Week Wrap-Up, presented by MSP Media Network.
So with that, we're going to wrap up today, June 14th. The MSP Dispatch Show. For everyone out there, please, please, please reach out to us, news@mspmedia.tv. What a great show. Great having you on, as always, Jason. Thank you so much. Any final words from you, Jason?
No, just glad to be here. I'll see you guys next time, I'm sure.
Always a pleasure. With that, everyone, take care. Be safe out there.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.